Well, first this is for this is not hybrid memory. This is another thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is for a process algorithm.
Oh, okay.
And you know, I have been spending this whole time trying to define the problem of SFC map that is actually not easy to define. So I don't know if to give up on that and leave that for later or what.
Yeah, we can talk about whatever you want.
Okay. So anyway, so I was also considering this problem. So if we, you know, that so far we have this project where we move data between devices,
mm-hmm.
in block generality.
Okay.
Right. So I was thinking that probably we could, instead of doing in block granularity, doing in extent granularity of different sizes.
Okay.
That will reduce the map in size, and that will also help in keeping the locality of in blocks, right? I'm assuming that these extents are related in that they are always read sequentially or written sequentially.
So, I guess the problem then translates to how do you choose your extents?
Yeah.
Right. And
so, but I don't know, for this specific problem.
But that's a good optimization, possibly.
Yeah.
Possibly a good optimization.
The thing is that if we introduce that new variable, which is the having the extent, we can now map this problem exactly as is to the knapsack problem, because now we have, if we give values to this extent,
yeah.
and we know the size,
uh-huh.
We have other device where we want to move this data to, even some, I don't know, because that data is popular, I don't know.
No, wait a minute, are you saying that by making extent size variable, we map it to an knapsack problem?
Yes.
If we can do that, then the simpler version can also be mapped to the knapsack problem, right?
Yes, but it would be...
I mean, every item has the same weight.
Yes, but in that case, it's a knapsack problem, the partial knapsack problem, which is that you can get any...
You mean...
There are two versions of knapsack.
Uh-huh.
The 0-1.
Yeah. Fractional.
Which is, fractional, exactly, uh-huh. And the fractional. If we leave it as a block, then it is more like a fractional knapsack, because all.
Which problem is a knapsack problem?
The knapsack problem is the one that.
No. I mean, which of these? SRC map problem.
No, I'm talking about a different problem.
Oh, a different problem.
Yes.
I see. Okay, what is this different problem? I guess I missed that completely.
It's, if we have this project with many projects, for instance, Borg and Excel,
uh-huh.
and even hybrid storage device, where we have two devices.
Okay.
And usually we have one main device, and
okay.
we have another device, which is a cache or something, right?
Okay.
So my idea is that, and now we are moving that in block granularity.
Okay.
Right. So my idea is that if we extend the block granularity to be any extent, right, and we, I guess that's another problem. I guess what I was thinking is that extent is related in that they are, all the blocks in that extent are always accessed sequentially, for instance. I think this is better for Borg.
Okay.
You know, we take that into account. Okay. So after we have that extent and we have our device with certain size, right? We also will have a value for the extent, some optimization value, probably popularity, probably how much energy does that consume, that specific extent, I don't know, something like that, an optimization function, let's say that is that the higher it is, the better. Then we can map that problem to the knapsack, right? Where we can map the size of the extent to the size of the object. We can map the function of the or the value of the function to of the extent to the value of the object in the knapsack, and our truck will be the new device where we are caching data. So the problem I see is that I don't know exactly if this notion of extent is useful or not.
Yeah. Well, there are two problems. One is the first of all, how to define the extents, which you already talked about, and the second is how do you attach value to each extent? Some sort of maybe popularity measure or something.
Some popularity, probably something like the power consumption of that block so far, if we want to move it to a...
And the size of the extent would be the weight of the object?
And the size of the extent would be the size of the object.
Size of the object, yeah. And then the size of the cache will be the size of the knapsack.
Of the truck.
Yeah, of the truck. Well, that's a different problem. Knapsack is... You're talking about the robber example.
Yes.
But the knapsack, there is no truck. There is only a knapsack, which is basically a sack.
Yeah.
Like a bag.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's besides the point.
Exactly.
Yeah, that seems...
But there is a weight.
Isn't the weight the size of the...
Yeah.
The size of the...
Yes.
Yeah, that's the weight.
That's the weight. Exactly.
And the knapsack also has a capacity in terms of how heavy it can get.
Yes. Which is the size of the device.
Yeah.
Of the cache device. Yeah, the problem with this is that I don't know if it's too easy, right? Because if we find that map, we already solved the problem. Because we know how to solve knapsack.
Mm-hmm. And we know approximate solutions.
No, the knapsack, we have these dynamic programming solutions.
Yeah, and that works when the P value is small, right? The total capacity is small.
Yes.
But in our case, the total capacity can be fairly large. I mean, the cache is in 10 or hundreds of gigabytes.
Really. I mean, if we take...
And the extents are in 4K, then...
Yeah, we can get approximations if we divide the value.
Yeah, but this is certainly a straightforward mapping.
Yes. So it's not really, I mean, I found this problem that could be interesting to apply to something, but I don't know how valuable it is for the algorithm.
Yeah, and here we are sort of assuming that you cannot break up the extents. No point in breaking up extents.
No, actually, the idea is that you
co-locate the extents.
Yeah, but you make the extents. Anyway, I think in this problem, the real problem is how to create the extent, how to get bigger extent. If the extent is no longer required to be together, then divide that and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's one problem.
Okay.
Another problem I was thinking is the problem of the online scaling of the hybrid storage.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the idea that we have two devices. We have some requests that need to go to one device or the other, and we have some other requests which have an option to go to either one of the two devices. So work on that. What is the optimal solution for that?
So what we have right now is is based on this quantum request.
Yes.
Which I think is
pretty good because.
Well, the thing is that this is an online problem. It's not like you have a problem and you have everything available right at the beginning and you solve it. Right?
Yeah.
The SRC map problems are mostly, you know, there are two. You can look at it both ways. You can look at it as a static problem as well as an online problem. Even the static problem is fairly complex to analyze.
Yeah.
But the good thing is that it's static. It's not an online. You don't need an online algo.
Right.
This H, the hybrid storage thing is an online, requires
yeah.
an online algorithm.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that Kree is going to talk about next class, right? He said he's going to start talking about online algorithms.
No, I think it's a randomized algorithm.
Oh, randomized algorithm. But eventually he'll talk about online algorithms.
Yeah. Okay, that was the Earl Brown. And the Earl Brown was the hybrid memory cost state replacement algorithm, which we don't have a good approximation or good algorithm on how to do that.
Is that also online?
Not really, because we have to find the best solution in each page for.
The best candidate.
The best candidate in each page for.
And the best candidate.
But I was thinking that probably we can use this because we can tolerate errors, right? So there was this algorithm or this technique that he gave last time, or sorry, in the first class, that was choose n candidates randomly and choose the maximum of that one.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that it will be always constant to choose one. Right.
And that has some properties.
That has some properties based on how, depending on n, we'll have different probability of choosing and the exact. No, it's not an approximation. There is no guarantee it's a maximum.
There is a probability
to be the maximum.
Is the probability to be the maximum, but what I'm saying is that there is no approximation ratio to say that, well, I'll always be closer.
Yeah,
by
maximum.
Someone.
Yeah, no, there is no.
But the probability is increases as you increase n. The probability of being the maximum or closer.
Exactly.
To the maximum.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But I think even if you choose n small, let's say 5 out of 1,000, the probability of being the maximum I have to calculate. It doesn't seem.
But now, what is? I mean, now you're doing a full sorting or something of that sort, right?
I first tried doing a full sorting.
But that's too slow.
Then I tried to sort periodically.
Mm.
I had some problems with that in the implementation. And then right now we don't have an implementation for it.
You mean we don't, but there is an LRU, right?
We have an LRU, but what I'm saying is that we don't have an implementation for
the
cost
base. That's an interesting problem too, and that's related to this project.
Yeah.
So yeah, that might be worth thinking about some more.
Yeah. Okay.
And you can actually show some results as well, right? Some comparison results and with various approximations. that could make for a nice
day. Yeah, and
nice,
the thing is that
nice presentation at the end.
We have, and we have to do that fast. And finally, we can do this fast. Okay. So, okay, so about hybrid memory. So these are the numbers for the traces I analyzed with the VGT, right? So these are the different phases in trace. So what I did is Q to G, which is from the entry point in the block trace to the point of getting the request structure.
Okay.
The thing is that there is a pool of request structures, and if there is no request to send the next one, we need to wait. That's why it's separated. And then G to I, right, or Q to M. In the case of Q to M, we don't need a new structure because we are merging that with some other structure, so we don't need one.
Okay.
Right. So those three. Right?
And what about I to D?
I to D is I to D and M to D is the Q waiting time. You see, it's usually big. Right.
What is the minimum of? Maybe you can look at the minimum of that value.
Minimum is this.
Yeah, so we should take the minimum of those values. Assuming that there is the queue is empty, then you should get the minimum, right?
Oh, I see what you mean. I see what you mean.
We could do that.
Yeah, but the thing is that, okay, I see. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Then the only thing I need to add here is the value of I to D and M to D, right? Which is 1 microsecond, this is millisecond, microsecond, which is plus 1.35 and plus 20 microseconds.
Where is most of the time going, though?
You see? QHG is 15 microseconds. It's really huge.
50?
15.
15, okay.
Yeah, the other guys is not that big. The other, in G2I, is only 1 microsecond, and in Q2M, it's only 0.4 microseconds.
Q to G is when you enter the block layer until the point that you merge?
Q to G is from the entry point of a block layer to the request of a new request structure. When you try to get a new...
This doesn't involve the anticipatory waiting, right, by any chance?
Anticipatory. You mean the plugin? The plugin happens. No, I don't think so.
Or even if it's plugging, it would just wait in the queue.
It would wait in the queue, exactly.
That is something that we do not account for.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Exactly. There is a wait, a maximum wait of up to 6 seconds.
In the queue.
In the queue.
Wow.
That's a lot, right? That's
a lot, yeah. That means that at some point there were maybe a whole bunch of requests in the queue. And this is for which developer trace?
For my machine. Oh, by the way, I read the paper, the disk cache for the SSD.
Yeah,
very interesting. It's like a a small idea, well presented. I like the paper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's not, I mean, I thought that the paper was not the level of fast when I read it.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought it was good.
Yeah?
Yeah. Mm. Why do you think that?
I mean, just based on the... I the idea was interesting, but I thought, for instance, there were some... it was not complete in some sense. So they are claiming that by sending requests to disk first, they reduce the traffic to the SSD by 2 or 3x.
Okay.
Right? That's what they're claiming. For instance, they didn't talk about, what kind of metadata do they need to maintain, right? I mean, in terms of persistence and that kind of stuff.
That's true, yeah.
So that's
actually
one
they
thing.
Talk a little bit about it.
They do?
Yeah. But I thought it was really straightforward, it's not a problem. Because the thing is that if you see at the end, the disk is just like a journal,
mm-hmm.
right? A block level journal. So what they need to do is just to, if there is a crash, they only need to repeat all the operations that are in that disk.
Mm-hmm.
And then you recover, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really straightforward. It's always nice. Because you don't really have that from that we usually have, for instance, in Word.
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing is that you're allowing all the operations, at least all the write operations in the disk, so you know exactly what needs to go to if the crash happens.
Hmm. The other thing which I found was, I didn't see, like, I don't know if they did enough performance evaluation.
That's probably true, yeah.
Performance in terms of, okay, if you have a lot of write traffic, then you have additional traffic on the disk, it's just not writing to disk, you have writing to disk going on, you have reading from disk going on, you have additional reading from disk going on because you need to flush stuff to SSD.
You mean like they don't show like the worst case?
Yeah.
Of the system.
Yeah.
What happened when the disk doesn't have more space?
Exactly.
They don't mention that.
So when the disk is, I mean, even if the disk has more space, you probably want to do eager reclaiming, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to write stuff out to flush so that you do not have to read from disk.
Yeah.
The whole point is that you write stuff to flush so that when you're reading stuff, you read from flush, not from disk. And if you want to do that, you want to sort of do flushing as early as possible.
Yeah. That paper, by the way, gave me this idea that there was to eliminate the need of, when you have a RAID file, the best case is when you write the full sprite,
mm-hmm.
right? Because you don't have to read,
yeah.
You have the maximum efficiency. So if we add to that disk or that RAID, we add a log device like this one, then we will increase the amount of full stripe write that happen to the device. Because we log all these new writes in the new log, and then...
Yeah, but then the problem is that your RAID is not reliable anymore.
Yes, exactly. What I was thinking to, in order to address that, is to make this log device a RAID one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So you make a RAID one, and this is
but
even
then,
more.
But then, how does it help writing in full stride?
Because you don't need to calculate part. You don't need to read the parity block, right?
How come?
Because the thing is that if you write the full stride,
but you know you may not write the full stride.
But that's true. But you if you have a small lock where you have multiple overwrites, as you said, then you will increase the chance of that happening.
Well, you do that anyway with the write buffer in the memory, right? When you have a write buffer in memory, stuff is being buffered in memory for a period of time.
True.
Before you actually have to write it out.
But the memory is not that big, and there is flushing happening in certain periods of time. Say every 5 seconds, because of QE flush, which probably don't allow you to have the same opportunity.
I see. Yeah, well, it requires overhead of RAID 1, right?
Yeah.
And now you need a 2 additional disks. Let's say you're doing RAID 5 and you have like 100 disks, then 2 additional disks is not a problem. But if you have 10 disks, 2 additional disks is
substantial
overhead.
Yeah.
Right, so those are some things.
Yeah, the other thing I was thinking is that if your RAID is composed of, instead of disks, SSDs, then it would be better as well. Because one additional problem to all the problems that has partially writing to a full stride, now you also add fragmentation to the SSD, which I'm guessing that in the case, if you have a RAID and you write and you write
to SSD, if you have an SSD RAID. Well, there is this paper at EuroSys this year.
It's about RAIDs and
SSDs. Yeah, making a RAID out of SSD. And basically, the whole idea is that you want to design a very different kind of RAID.
I see.
For SSD.
That's
EuroSys 1, all 9? EuroSys 10, it's not yet published.
Oh, it's not yet published.
For differential RAID.
On 4P?
No, this one was a previous version published in Hot Storage.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they are basically, I haven't read this yet, I just started reading it.
So, do you see better now?
It's more clear.
Yeah.
I can read this without glass, actually. But it's just that sometimes I cannot read very well. And it just depends on...
Well, the thing is that for me was... I guess I, wait a long time before I got a glass. So, for me was, changed a lot. When I put the glass on, it was like, whoa, I can see everything. I'm clear.
Yeah. This is very low power, actually. 0.5 and 0.25.
For me, it's 0.5 and 0.7.
Oh, so it's not too different, right?
Not too big.
So, that's not a bad. I mean, fix it up at the right time.
Yeah.
So, it's not that you waited for really long.
Well, I mean, it was probably 1 year since I started came back and got it there.
Yeah, for me, I mean, the font is not crisp. It's sort of like a little bit soft. You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah.
Like soft on the edges. But when I put this on, then it becomes like the edges become sharp. But I can read anyway. I mean, even if the edges even if the edges are, I mean, LaTeX documents are much easier usually.
The modern font.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what is this different RAID?
Yeah, differential RAID.
Rethinking RAID for SSD reliability. Oh, they talk about the reliability.
Yeah, it's mainly for reliability. They basically argue that
okay, for with traditional RAID, all the SSDs degrade at the same rate,
mm-hmm.
and they will all fail at the same time.
Okay.
And you don't want that happening.
That makes sense.
And that's why you
this
want
is from
to
Microsoft research.
Microsoft, yeah.
Yeah, that guy polishes a lot.
Yeah. Oh, they're saying distribute parity blocks unevenly across the device. So some SSDs will have more parity blocks, and others
why?
Will have
okay.
because parity updates are required, right? When you do writes, parity always gets updated.
Why don't you use something like RAID 4?
Well, RAID 4 will four devices will fail at the same time because then you have only one parity. But what they, I think, yeah, RAID 4 is also a reasonable solution because, well, no, not really.
Can you have something like a
you want to make
RAID
the,
4 in a house in the sense that you have two parity?
You can have,
but that's RAID
6. Yeah, but once again, there are some disks in there which are correlated in how, when they fail, right? What they want is to completely randomize or completely
okay.
which
one
out
fails first, the second fails
yeah,
after that. And
that's
that.
Exactly what it is.
Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah, anyway.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Well, I think we need to discuss about the, I think that's important about the parity again to be in the same page.
Yeah. Well, we can do it tomorrow if you want.
Tomorrow?
It's tomorrow afternoon.
Afternoon. What time?
Or tomorrow afternoon. Yeah, tomorrow afternoon. And